So we are holding just after the Mishnah. So to on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. So to recap, we said the Mishnah had mentioned, the first thing the Mishnah had mentioned is if you found the animal in a barn, in a stable, then you don't have to do anything with it. But if you find it in Rishos HaRabim, then you do have to do something with it. And we said, we talked about the Rishonim, talk about that maybe if it's in Rishos HaRabim, it's nervous because of the crowd, or it looks like it's lost or whatever there, and therefore that's what we're talking about. So, Gemara says, Amar Rava, Refes Sh'amru, this barn that we're talking about that you found the animal in, Eina Masa v'Eina Meshameres. We're talking about the kind of barn that is not going to make the animal get lost. And it's also not the kind of Eina Meshameres, but it's not the kind that will keep the animal definitively in there either.
Masa?
Okay, so Masa means that it could make it get lost. So there's a few different explanations. I mean, Rashi just says that it means, for example, that it's not the kind of thing that the animal will feel compelled to run out of. So therefore, that brings a couple of different Rishonim for different possibilities. Right. So that, in other words, for example, one possibility is there is some pasture over there, so it's not like the animal is going to be starving in there and therefore like break out no matter what. Like a concept that we learn in Bava Kamma when you leave it in a place in the hot sun. So it's not like that, let's say, but it's Vein and Mishnah, but in the hand, it's not locked either. If the animal does want to go out, there's nothing stopping it. They talk about different other nuances in it. For example, the Meiri talks about, let's say, that Eina Masa means that there's only a narrow opening for the animal to go through. If it was going to go through, it would have to squeeze out. But it could. There's nothing actually preventing it from squeezing out and going. Masa in Lashon Toya, in Lashon Wandering. And Shulchan Aruch brings another possibility also that we're talking about. If a barn that would be considered Masa would be if it was like Avraham's tent. It had doors on all four sides so the animal can get out any which way. The Shachog is maybe if you only have two. Whatever. The point is that it ain't a Masa. It's not like it's going to induce the animal necessarily to leave. On the other hand, there's nothing preventing it from leaving either. Why? Ain't a Masa, Midikatani, ain't a Chayavah. You know that's not something that the animal will is bound to get lost from because the Mishnah says you're not chayav to do anything, implying that the animal is fairly safe. The Einim Shameres, but on the other hand, it has to be the kind of barn that's not definitely going to keep the animal inside, since the Mishnah had to mention that you're not chayav in it. Because if you're talking about a barn where the animal can definitely stay safely, like it's locked or whatever, then there's no chiddush in the Mishnah. Hashta, mashkach, lo avroi, ma'ay lo legavoi. Consider, if you found the animal outside and you brought it into such a barn, that would be enough, as we learned yesterday, that you can bring it to the guy's gino or churva or whatever, and that's good enough. Much more so if you found it inside such a barn that actually has a lock on it, for sure you would be possible from doing anything. So from that you see that's not one where the animal will necessarily definitively stay in there. On the other hand, it's ain't a masa, because if it was, then you would be chayav to bring it someplace more safe. Yeah, so it's in between. Yeah. Then the Mishnah had, okay, so the Mishnah had again mentioned Masab Refes Ein Chayiv. If you find the animal in a barn, then you're not Chayiv. So what kind of barn? So besides, previously we just talked about what the conditions in the barn as far as whether the animal is comfortable in there or not, or whether it can easily leave. Now we're going to talk about where this barn is. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Bohusha Emedes Teuchlet Chum. This is only if that barn is inside the Tchum of the city. Sure. Then you're not chayev in it, implying mikhlal de birshos adam b'achilah b'seichat tchum nami chayev. So the tchum shabbos. Yeah. So in other words, the Mishnah mentioned two contrasting cases. You found it in a barn versus you found it in a birshos adam. As usual, we assume that the two cases in the Mishnah should be as similar as possible, except for the whatever differences I mentioned. In this case, if the only difference mentioned is between a barn and a Rishos HaRabim, then according to this version of Rabbi Yitzchak, we'll have another version in a second, that we're saying the barn is something that's inside the tchum, miklal, from which we can deduce. That if you find the animal in a Rishos HaRabim, even if it is within the tchum of the city, you will be chayav to return it by implication, yeah, because, in other words, you're saying, the difference is, if it's within the tchum, and if it's in a barn, fine, you assume it's safe enough over there. The animal, the owner will have a general idea that it's there, and therefore it's good enough. As we just said, it's not the kind of barn where the animal is necessarily going to run away from. But if you found it within the tchum, but on Rishos HaRabim, and again, either it's nervous because of the crowds, or it looks lost, or whatever, then even if it's within the tchum, you would have to return it. Then there are those who say that Rabbi Yitzchak's statement actually refers to the Sefer, where the Mishnah had said, that if you found the animal in Rishos HaRabim, then you're obligated to do something about it. That is only talking about when are you chayiv in Rishos HaRabim, only if it's outside the Tchum. which is a kula compared to the first version. You know, the first version would say Rishos HaRavim, you're always chayev, and a barn you're chayev if it's outside the tum. There's only one out of four possible cases if it's a barn and it's within the tum where you're potter. The second version is the other way around. It's more makel, that only if it's in Rishos HaRavim and it's outside the city, only that one out of four cases are you chayev. The cloud, the berefes, afilo, and medes, chutz l'tchum, nami ein chayev, where the implication, therefore, would be that if it's in a barn, even if it's outside the tchum, you're also not chayev to do anything about it. So three out of the four possible cases, that according to this version, you would be potter. As the Rambam, in fact, paskens that way, because usually the Rambam does pasken according to the second lashon in the Gemara.
Refes means, again, the barn.
Refes is a barn, yeah. So it comes out, therefore, that's only if it's in a barn, then you're good regardless. And if it's in Rishos HaRavim, and if it's in Rishos HaRavim outside the tum, then you're responsible for it.
Okay, so it can't be in the barn and be in the Rishos HaRavim, right?
Well, no. I mean, the barn is a Rishos HaRavim. Yeah, exactly. This is Rashi's Girsa, by the way. There are a couple of other, some Rishonim have a Girsa differently. That the first time he was saying that the barn is talking is Tchutz L'Tum. And the second one was talking about that the Rishos HaRavim is B'seichas Chum, in which case it comes out there's not as much of a difference. Like this was saying, according to Rashi's version, there's a huge difference between the first and the second versions in the Gemara. One is Machmir in three out of four cases, and the other one is Mekel in three out of four cases. If you have the different years, so then it comes much closer together. Okay. Then the Mishnah. The halacha is, well, the Rambam Paskins, actually, the Beis Yosef has the Beis Yosef apparently had a different Girsa in the Rambam, saying that not quite according to the second version that we have over here, but rather that if it's outside the tum, you're always chayev, and therefore he had a problem with how does the Rambam square that with the Gemara that we have. So yeah, okay, but many Achronim say on that the correct Girsa in the Rambam is not the way the Beis Yosef had it, but rather the way we can find it in our printed Rambams, which is strictly according to the second lashon over here. The Mishnah said Bevesach Kvaras Lo Yitame Lo, that if you find the animal in a Bevesach Kvaras and you're a Kohen, right, then you shouldn't be Matami for it. And the Mishnah continued that if your father tells you become Tame, or he tells you don't return it, yeah, then you don't listen to him. So Tana Rabbanim, Minayin Shim Omalei Ovavi Tame, Asha Omalei Al Pasir Shalai Yishmalei. How do we know this, Dean? That if your father tells you to become Tame, or he tells you don't return it, that you shouldn't listen to him. Again, we talked about yesterday when he says Yitame, are we talking about he's saying just being metame for no special reason, or maybe let's say in order to do kibudav for me, to do something for me, and the same thing with al-taksir, or so is he stam saying hitame or al-taksir for no particular reason, or is he saying it, for example, because I have something else?
For no reason, that some shouldn't listen to him.
Well,
the question.
Because maybe only in that case, but maybe we mentioned yesterday from the chedushim amyuchot and la-ritva, the old, what used to be printed as chedushim la-ritva, and now is known as not from him, but it's from some other rishon, that maybe in fact if the father is telling him to become tummy in order to do Hashavas Aveda, maybe you should listen, because then you have two S's against one and against one S, and like this.
So, okay. No, but that's for a reason.
That's what I'm saying. So then the Mishnah would be telling us that only if he tells us for no reason. Yeah, well, we have to learn from a pasuk. After all, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, kibudav ve'em is a pretty important thing. Yeah. Maybe it is doicha other mitzvahs. So how do we know this? Shanema, the pasuk says, "Ish imeva oviv tiro ves shabsosi tishmeru ani Hashem." Famous thing, the Torah says that each person should fear their father, should respect their father and mother, but keep my Shabbos. I am Hashem, implying kochem chayovim mechvodi. All of you, your parents, as well as you, are all chayiv in my covet. So therefore, my covet overrides your father. So therefore, your father tells you to be mechal Shabbos, for example, or any other mitzvah, you don't listen to him.
Isn't there a theory between saying Kibud Av V'em on one hand, and Ishima the Aviv Tiro? I mean,
so we learned in Kedushin. There's two different things. There's Kovod and there's Moda. We learned in Kedushin about it. We learned in the whole story of Kibud Av V'em over there. We said that Kovod is the positive things you do for him. For example, helping him with food and drink, and other such things, and then showing him honor after he passed away by using the appropriate terms for him, having a kaparas mishkavah or zechurin levracha, etc. And moda is thing is sort of like the negative things. Don't sit in his place. Don't contradict him, etc. Don't call him by the
covet also.
No, that's part of moda. We learned about it over there. Okay. Anyway, incidentally, I mean, a couple of them, the Farshim on the Pasuk asked the interesting question: why of all things does the Torah mention this concept in connection with Shabbos? Maybe you would say, okay, Shabbos is a very major mitzvah. Don't override that because of kibud av v'em. Maybe a lesser mitzvah you should. There's a number of different answers that the Mefarshim give. One interesting one that Kli Yochar says is because we know what the whole basis of Kibud Av V'Em is, because there's three partners that make up a person: the father, the mother, and the Eivishter. So therefore, you might have the father is trying to convince you, what are you bothering with Shabbos for? The Eivishter didn't create the world. It's only your mother and I who created you. Therefore, the stress is, don't pay attention to that. Remember that the Eivishter was involved in creating you as well, and therefore that overrides
it. By extension, the father and mother is also the Eivishter.
No, they're not. They're not the Eivishter themselves. They're the Eivishter.
No, they were created by the Eivishter.
Yeah. Well, okay. Indeed. Yeah. But that's yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And so that whole thing, the Eden Beis Midrash, which is so there, is not doicha the building on Shabbos. Just that's why it's placed over there.
But. True. Okay. Well, that's a different thing. That's later on in that same parak, also in Parshas Kedoshim, where it says that's precisely the Shemar of Mekdashi Tiro. That's different. That's the Mekdashi Tiro. This is the issue. This is the issue. Im Evolved Tiro. Yeah. Okay. So you ask, time at a kosher rachmanahos eschab saitis ishmeru. Fine, what are you telling me? Because there is a kosher, because the pasuk mentioned these words eschab saitis ishmeru. Therefore, that teaches us that kibud av v'em does not override Shabbos or any other mitzvah. Hold on, hachi have amin esaisalei. So what does that mean? Why should you think that otherwise, if you didn't have the words eschab saitis ishmeru, you would think kibud av v'em does override, let's say, the mitzvah of a kohen becoming tamei,
right,
or returning a lost object? Ramai, hai esse v'hai lois esse v'esse, because kibud av v'em is only an esse. Not doing a Shavas Aveda or Koyin becoming Tomei is a Lois Esen and Esse, as we've learned before. The Lois Asi Esse V'Docha is Lois Esen V'Esse. And we know a general rule, an Esse cannot override a Lois Esse plus an Esse. So even without a Shavas Aveda Shemoto, we would know that you can't listen to your parents to avoid, so what do you need? A Shavas Aveda Shemoto, right. The answer is Itzrich. We still need it. Sak Dayta Hamina, because otherwise we might have thought to say, because there's a Hekish that the Torah compares Kibud Av V'Em to the Kavod of the Eivishter. As we learned in Kiddushin, yes. Shenema kan Kavod Savicha V'Simecha V'Nem L'Halan Kavod Hashem Mahoncha. You have Kavod, is the same term as used, honor your father and mother. And there's a pasuk in Mishlei, honor Hashem from your wealth. See, there's a certain similarity between them. Therefore, you would think Kibud Av V'Em is important enough that it's compared to the Kavod of the Eivishter. Maybe then you use it to override a mitzvah. Kamash Mu'andalai Lishmalei, and therefore that is the Kiddush that you don't.
Yes,
that's the chiddush of a subsidiary shmurda.
You wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know. You would think, in general, an esse doesn't override a lois esse plus an esse. But the esse, kibud av v'em, which is almost like honoring the Eivishter, maybe that's different. The pasuk can tell you that now. Now we're going to start talking about priko t'ina. We started yesterday in the middle of the Mishnah, about the mitzvah of unloading and reloading an animal that's having trouble with its burden. The Mishnah said, "Mitzvah min haTorah lifrek avo lo litein." The mitzvah min haTorah is to unload the animal, not to reload it. Question is, "My avo lo litein." What do you mean? There's no mitzvah to reload. Ilemim lo litein klal, avo lo litein klal. Are you going to say that the Mishnah means there's no mitzvah in the Torah to reload it at all? Why? Ma'ishna prika dechtiv oziv tap. Now we have to realize, as we started talking about a couple of days ago, that there's two places where the Torah talks about this mitzvah. One is in Parshas Mishpatim, Kisira Chamor Sainacha Roivet Tachas Masoi. You see your enemy's donkey sprawled out or lying down under its burden. B'chadaltim Azoivlo, you would think to hold back from helping him. No, oziv tazivima, you would definitely have to help him. And we learned before oziv taziv, the double meaning. And then you have in Parshas Kiseite, you shouldn't see your brother's ox or his donkey falling by the side of the road. And ignore them. You have to help lift it up with it. So you have two places. So prika is min haTorah, because the Torah says you have to help him. Tina is just as much in the Torah in Parshas Kikaitse. So both of them are mitzvah and haTorah. What does the Mishnah mean? One of them is a mitzvah and the other one not. Ela, no. What the Mishnah means is mitzvah natorah lifrik b'chinam v'lo litin b'chinam ela b'schar. It means like this. Min haTorah, the mitzvah is to help unload for free. You don't take pay for that. But to reload, you don't have to do it for free. You have to do it. You're able to do it b'schar.
Because
that's, we're going to see. We don't have a shenamah for it. Yeah,
we're
number one. Tzav al-Chaim, exactly. So there you have an issue with a prika, but not necessarily a tzina.
No, it's nothing to do with chinam or not.
No, but we're going to figure it out here in the Soviet. Mind you, there is actually a machlokas rishonim. There is a machlokas between the Rosh and the Ran on the question, when we say prika is b'chinam of aloy b'schar, and then ti'ina is b'schar, what does that mean? Are we talking about, for example, let's say the person is losing time off work, like we talked about before, about a metziah. Is he entitled maybe to some compensation for that, even when it comes to prika? Or maybe not. Maybe it means that Prika absolutely, there's no way you could charge even a cent for it, no matter how much time you're losing. And to Ina, and then the question is similarly with Ina. Is it only are you entitled to demand skar if you're losing time off work or whatever, but otherwise, if you had nothing to do anyway, you're not entitled to demand skar with Ina. Or maybe not. Maybe you're entitled to demand skar either way. So the Rosh and the Ram, the Rosh
time can be considered skar. It's not really a skar.
If you could have been working and earning some other money during that time, then yeah,
you're losing.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we mean by skar. So the Rosh and the Ram discussed that issue, whether, for example, if you had nothing else to do anyway, if you weren't going to be earning money during that time, are you entitled to collect money for Tina or not?
But wouldn't you say, because it's a lot easier to do and it takes a lot of time?
Maybe not. I mean, it depends how it is. I don't know. I mean, the ropes can be all tangled up and whatever. Who knows? Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, you have also the animal itself is probably struggling against you. Yeah. Okay. Rav Shimon Omer, then Rav Shimon, we said in the Mishnah, said, in the Mishnah he just said Afliton, that there's also a mitzvah to load, and now we understand that he means Afliton Bechinam, it means there's also a mitzvah to reload for free, without charging for it. So, Tanein Eloha B'Tanan Rabbanan, thus we learn by implication in the Mishnah what we say explicitly in a Braisa, which therefore tells us that this Braisa is correct, Prika Bechinam Ti'ina B'Skar, Prika has to be done for free. Te'ina, you're allowed to charge for. Rav Shimon Omer Zuvah Zabachinam, and Rav Shimon says both of them have to be done for free.
And the halacha?
The halacha is like the chachamim, as usual. The question is, my time married to Rabbanan, what is the Rabbanan's reason? Why tack if both of them, it says in the Torah, why are we distinguishing one from the other? Like this. The Isak Radach to Rav Shimon, they say like this. If you were going to say like Rav Shimon that both of them are meant to be for free, the Torah would have only had to mention the concept of prika, of taking off the burden from the animal. The Torah did not have to mention at all, or no, the other way around, let it mention ti'ina, let it mention you have a mitzvah to reload the animal. Don't mention you have a mitzvah to unload the animal. Reloading the animal. There's no tsar to the animal, the fact that it's not loaded. There's no chisorin kis. There is a slight chisorin kis, as we're going to say later, because the guy is standing there by the side of the road and he may miss the market day or whatever, but there's not necessarily a chisorin kis. Chayev, and yet...
You can't, you see the donkey could die.
Well, there's that, right. Yeah, okay, there is that. Yeah, you're right. No, but that's the point. In other words, when it comes to Te'ina, the animal is unloaded over there already. There's not going to be any loss.
No
there might be a
right.
That's the point. There's no tzar bal chayim, and there's also no chisarin, right? In the sense, the animal itself is not going to be injured in the situation. The owner may have chisarin case later on because he misses the market day or whatever. But we're not getting into that yet.
Right.
But we're saying chayev prika is the tzar bal chayim chisarin case like Hoshkin. How much more so than prika, where there's both of those factors, the tzar bal chayim and there's chisarin case because the animal is going to break down. How much more so you should have to help? The fact that it doesn't do that, el lamai hirchs akasver achmana. So why indeed does the Torah have to write them separately? Loim aloch prika b'chinam tina b'schar. Just to teach you that one is b'chinam, the other one is b'schar. Meaning in other words, like this, Rashi says, if the Torah had only written to Ina and we were going to end up learning it out from Prika by a Kavachomer, we would say like this. The Torah is mentioning you have to do it. It doesn't say anything about whether you have to do it for free or not. Therefore, we can assume you're allowed to charge for it. Fine, it's like any other service that you do for a person. In which case, we would say when it comes to Prika also, Daya, the famous thing we learned in Baba Kama, Daya, Levomen, Adin, Lias, Kenod. And if you're going to make a Kavachomer, what you learn out by the Kavachomer can't be any stronger than the original thing. If to Ina, there's no reason to think from the Pasuk that you can't get Skar for it, then Prika should also be the same way. Therefore, the Torah had to write Prika separately to teach us that, no, you don't learn it by Kavachoyma, you learn it because the Pasuk itself says so, therefore you can learn that has to be Bechina. Rav Shimon, my timer, where's Rav Shimon? Why does he disagree with that and say both of them have to be done for free? Mishum Dolay Masai Mikroi, he says, yes, but you don't have Sukkim themselves. It's not definitive which one is which. Which one means Prika and which one means Tina. So you can't say, you Chachamim are saying if it only said one, we could have learned out the other one by a Kavachayim. But the Psukim themselves don't use the word Prika or Te'ina. So you wouldn't understand. You wouldn't, if you only had one, you wouldn't know that it means Te'ina and then learn Prika from it by a Kavachayim. You would think it means Prika and you wouldn't know there's a mitzvah of Te'ina at all. The one in Mishpatim is that you see the donkey Roivitz Tachas Masoi lying down under its burden. And the one in Kiteite is that you see the donkey or the ox, Noflin Baderach, falling by the road. So it's not clear which one, both of them could be, one or the other of them could be talking about Tehillah, and you wouldn't know Tehillah at all. Therefore, Rav Shimon says, no, the Torah had to write both of them. So you learn one refers to Pirkei, one refers to Tehina. Doesn't matter which one is which. But if not, you could have only written Tehina and you'd learn Pirkei from it by a Kal Vachomer. Therefore, there's no reason to say it. No Daya, no nothing. Necessarily, therefore, you have to say that the Torah means that both of them should be for free.
No two Pesukim, which part of it means that the donkey's falling? Only when it's loaded.
Well, that's what the Gemara is going to continue over here. Rabbanon, so the Rabbanon answer back. Am I learning the Simon? What makes you think the Psukim are not definitive? In Mishpatim, it says that the animal was lying under its burden, implying that it's still loaded, yes. Collapsing under the burden. Whereas the one in Kisete is that it's falling by the road. What does that mean? It means that everything is fallen, everything is lying on the road over there. The load is also lying on the road. The animal is standing or lying, whatever, it doesn't matter for our purposes. The load is also noiflin baderach, everything. The animal and the packages are all scattered all over the road, implying, therefore, that one must be talking about Tina, about reloading it onto the animal. The Romu Inu Tornayu Borcha Mashma, it's Mashma, that the animal itself and the load that it was carrying before and which has now been taken off it is all lying all over the road. Because that's sure, so it could be noiflim because of that, but yeah, okay.
Why is all scattered if the guy unloaded it for you?
Okay, not scattered per se. Romu doesn't mean scattered.
Yes,
I mean, it's lying on the road.
Yes,
the point is,
yeah, so unloaded, nice.
Fine, okay. It's lying on the road. Noiflim Aderech. Lying on the road. So that's the thing. The Chachamim are arguing the word noiflim implies that it's already been unloaded off the animal, and now it's lying there on the road, and you have a mitzvah to help reload it. So therefore, what are you telling me, Rav Shimon? You can't figure out which pasuk is referring to which. Just from the wording of the pasuk, you can see that the one in Mishpatim is talking about Prika. No, it doesn't say in so many words, but yeah.
But it alludes to it.
Reb Shimon would argue back, noiflim aderech inu tunayu alayu mashma. No, Reb Shimon would answer, the word noiflim aderech can just as well mean that the animal with the packages still on it is lying on the road. So therefore, both of them could mean that it's lying on that bit.
The animal also.
Collapsing.
Yeah, and therefore, Reb Shimon would say, either one could refer to Prika. So fine, now that you have two of them, you know one's Prika, one's Tina. But without that, you wouldn't have a way of knowing. Amar Rava. So now Rava says, Now we're going to talk about from here almost till the Mishnah, we're going to talk about the relationship of this to Tzar Balachayim. Midivrei Shneim Numad, based on what both the Chachamim and Reb Shimon are saying, we can learn that Tzar Balachayim Doraisa, that the concept of avoiding causing pain to animals is something Doraisa, because both of them are saying that Prika is the more important thing. Both of them are saying that Prika has to be done for free, and then either you could learn it with a Kal Vachomer, or you need two Pesukim, because otherwise you wouldn't have known. Because even Reb Shimon is only saying, because the Pesukim are not definitive, that one's talking about Prika and one's talking about Tina, that's why we needed both of them. But had the Torah clearly said one's talking about Tina and one's talking about Prika, then Reb Shimon would agree the Torah could have only told us one and we'd learn a Kal Vachomer and we'd use Daya. If it used the word Prika and it used the word Tina, then we would be able to use the same Kal Vachomer. He would say you could use the same Kal Vachomer the Chachamim used and the same Daya. You'd learn the same thing. Prika has to be done for free. Tina has to be done for can be done with charging. My love is from Tzar Balachayim Darshinan. L'chora, because we mentioned before there's two factors. One of them is Tzar Balachayim. That must be the key factor. Prika involves Tzar Balachayim. Tina does not. Therefore, both the Chachamim and Rav Shimon would agree that Prika is the more important thing. Interesting thing, by the way, where exactly we learn the Rishonim have several different opinions. Where exactly do we learn? Fine, if we're saying over here Tzar Balachayim Daraisa, but does that mean the Torah doesn't say here in so many words that you have to avoid causing pain to animals? Fine, you have to help unload the thing. That doesn't necessarily. So Rashi actually, there's a Rashi in Shabbos that says yes, we learn the whole concept of Tzar Balachayim from these Sukkim. The very fact that it says Ozer Tazavimo implies that you have a concept of Tzar Balachayim. A couple of other Rishonim bring other ones, including the Rambam brings it. When the Rambam talks about Tzar Balachayim, he says there's a different source for it. When the Malach says to Bilam, why did you hit your donkey these three times? Right. That implies there's an Isser of Tzar Balachayim. Yeah.
And before that, the donkey's complaining.
So. Well, the donkey's complaining doesn't establish anything in Halacha, but when the
why
Malach says
me.
Okay, but yeah. Okay. So L'chora, then we see that Tzar Balachayim is an important factor. Midaraisa. The answer is no. Maybe not. Maybe the only Maybe as far as the Midaraisa, the only thing we're dealing with is the only factor difference between Prika and Te'ina is the Chisorin case that's involved. In other words, leaving aside Tzav Bala Chaim. Let's say Midaraisa, there's no issue of Tzav Bala Chaim. The Chachamim introduced that concept. Still, you would have the other factor. You'd have Chisorin Kis as a reason enough to say that Prika should be for free, and Te'ina, maybe you could be able to pay. You could charge for it. But Hakakava, because we mean like this. Well, Ma Te'ina, the less the Chisorin Kis Chayev, Madach, loading of the animal. There's no chisorin kiss involved because, again, the animal is not going to break down anymore, and you still chayev to do it. Prika the is for chisorin kiss like Holshkin. Unloading the animal where there's a potential chisorin kiss because the animal may break down under the burden, how much more so? And you don't need to bring in Tzav Bala Chaim. You could very well say that Tzav Bala Chaim is a concept that only exists in Rabbanan.
Technically, it could be a chisorin kiss for Te'ina because
that's what the Gemara is going to say now. For Te'ina, in chisorin kiss? What are you talking about? There's no possible chisorin kiss for Te'ina. Mila yafkina da adhachi v'hachi batam shukei. Can't there be, couldn't the Torah, among the Torah is just saying in a generic way, you see a person who needs unloading or reloading of their animal. If we're going to say that one of those sukkim is talking about reloading, as we said that it does, fine, the Torah is being generic about it. You see somebody who needs help reloading his animal, you have to help him. It could very well be talking about a situation, for example, it's not just he's carrying his own packages or whatever, he's carrying stuff to sell. Meanwhile, while he's waiting over there for somebody to help him, he's losing time from the market time. He's going to lose the opportunity to sell his stuff. Inami also ganve v'shakli kol ma'ad yikabade. Or the situation might be that ganavim are going to come and steal what he has. So there is very much chisorin kis involved. Therefore, you have to say that chisorin kis is not really a difference between prika and te'ina. All you're left with, the only possible difference, them is Tzav Bala Chaim. There you go. Tzav Bala Chaim must be Daraisa. Well, not yet, Shmami. No, wait. We still have further to go. But yeah. Incidentally, though, Tosfos does point out that there are exceptions here. Some of the exceptions we've actually had already, and some of them we're going to go as we go through the sugya. We're going to see various exceptions. We talked the other day, for example, I was going to mention it again soon about Zokin Ve'en Lepi Kvoidei, for example. We said an old person with beneath his dignity to help with it. So what about Tzav Bala Chaim? Because there's also a covet of people. That's also that overrides that. We're going to see other factors that override it. Tosfos mentions another one, for example, that the minhag was in those days when a king died, they would hamstring the horse that he rode on. They'd cut the tendons and hoof, so it could never so it could never walk properly again. Like to symbolize, like that was the minhag in those days. And you're allowed to do it. So the Gemara says it's not considered baltashkes, it's not considered davkei hamori, it's not considered a goyish superstition because it was done in honor of the king, like to show nobody else is worthy to ride on his horse ever again. But that's an example of Tzav Bala Chaim, which is allowed because it had a valid purpose for the covet of the king. So we see, even if Tzav Bala Chaim is Daraisa, it's something that can be overridden where there's an important. I don't know, the fact of the matter is, you know.
Did you talk about that?
The Gemara mentions it in Avodah Zarah. There's actually a pasuk in Yoshua where after one of the battles with the Canaanim, Hashem tells Yoshua to hamstring the horses that they captured from the Canaanim. But besides that, also, I mean, so you have lots of other examples. I mean, Rishonim point out. I mean, you have many exceptions to Tzav Bala Chaim. We're allowed to shech them for food. We're allowed to use them for work and even whip them where necessary. You know, so there are exceptions. You know, we're not PETA after all. You know, we know that. You know, we know that. The Eved should put it. You know, Urdubid Gasta Yom of Eved Shemayim. You know, we're like we had in today's parasha. You know, we're in control, not the other way around. Yeah, that too. Yeah, indeed. Okay. Teda, the Gemara continues. I can prove in a different way to Tzav Bala Chaim Daraisa. You can prove in a different way that at least the Tanakhama and Reb Shimon hold that Tzav Bala Chaim is an issue Daraisa. Dikatani Sefer, because the Mishnah finished off. Rabbi Yosi Agvili Yomer Im Hayav Olav Yosi Amasoi. If the animal was overburdened more than the normal amount it's expected to carry, Ein Zoker Kloy, then you don't have to bother with it. Shenema Tachas Masoi Masa Shiyof Alamed Boy, because the pasuk says that the animal is under its burden, implying the normal kind of burden for such an animal. Miklal, so the implication, Lav Miklal, the Tanakhama Sava Zogoglai. The implication, evidently, is the Tanakhama would hold, even in that case, you still have to help out. My timer, now why would that be? Lav Mishram Dav Tzav Bala Chaim Daraisa. L'chura, it would be because the Tanakhama holds Tzav Bala Chaim Daraisa. Fine. In other words, Tosfos says, the question, the maksha over here in the Gemara, would assume, fine, the Tanakhama agrees, it's true. Masoi means a burden that the animal is normally capable of carrying. It's true mitzad that, you, it's true mitzad d'after, if it's overburdened, you wouldn't be obligated to help. But at least, fine, for free you wouldn't, because it wouldn't be a mitzvah of tzedakah, but at least you have to do it for pay. Whereas Rabbi Yossi said, ein zakeh klal, you don't even have to bother with it at all, even if the guy is willing to offer you money. So therefore, it would come out. The Tanakhama would say, tzad b'alachayim d'oraisa. Therefore, at least you have to do something, even if you're entitled to ask for pay for it. And Rabbi Yossi really would say that not. The answer is no. Dilma b'tachas masoi pligi. No, because that maybe the actual machlokas is, do we doush in those words, tachas masoi? The Rabbi Yossi sabar darshin and tachas masoi masi shiocha lamed boy. Rabbi Yossi would hold that tachas masoi implies that's the kind of burden this animal could normally carry. But Rabbanan sabar loy darshin and tachas masoi. And then Rabbanan would hold that not. But masoi means any kind of load that the animal that the animal is carrying, even if it's more than the animal is supposed to normally be carrying. So maybe indeed the Rabbanan would hold that tzad b'alachayim is the Rabbanan. So therefore, it's not an issue, tzad b'alachayim or not. But the Torah is telling you, if you see an overburdened animal, you have to help. Not mitzad the tzad b'alachayim, let's say, but mitzad that the animal, that the owner himself is going to have kisor in case, that the animal is going to collapse and then break a leg or whatever. Teda, in fact, let's prove the other way around. The tzad b'alachayim lav d'oraisa. You should be able to prove from our Mishnah, from a different case in our Mishnah, that tzad b'alachayim is not d'oraisa. Dichotani reisha, because the earlier part of the Mishnah said, Halach v'yoshev lo, if the owner of the animal goes and sits on the side, v'amalai ho v'alach mitzvah lifroik, and he says, since you have the mitzvah to unload it, you go ahead and unload it, then you're potter shenema imoy. Because it says to unload with him, and in this case, not with him. If you're going to say that tzad b'alachayim is an issue d'oraisa, and that's the reason behind the mitzvah of krika, mali isi l'mor abadeh or mali kilesi l'mor abadeh, who cares whether the owner is going to be involved or not? So in that case, if we say that tzad b'alachayim is d'rabbanan, fine. The Torah doesn't care about tzad b'alachayim. The Torah cares about the chesor in case of the owner. If the owner himself is saying, I'm going to sit on the side, I can't bother with it, fine, he's obviously not concerned about his historian case, like Aveda Midas, then fine, you don't have to bother either. But if you say it's Midaraisa, then Sab Alachaim, it's Sab Alachaim, either way. The answer is me Sabra, Potter, Potter, the Gamri. You're thinking, La'olam Sab Alachaim Daraisa. No, you can't, that's not a proof from that case. You could, after all, say that Sab Alachaim is an issue Daraisa. Because mi savret potter potter legamri, you're thinking that the word potter in the Mishnah when the Mishnah said that in that case when the owner just sits on the side, you're potter, because of imoy, you think potter means potter completely. The duma potter b'chinam b'chay b'schar. Or maybe all it means is you're potter from the point of view of the mitzvah of prika, and therefore you don't have to do it for free. However, you do have to do it for schar. So therefore, the Torah would be saying like this: ki is in the morabade, if the owner is helping out with it. Of a gabe b'chinam, then you should also do it with him for free. V'chiles el amara b'hadei, and if the owner is not going to be helping out with it, of a gabe b'schar, you should still do it. You should still do it for the animal. You're entitled to collect pay for it. Uloilam tzav b'alachayim d'oraisa, but really, actually, tzav b'alachayim would be d'oraisa, and therefore, either way, the Torah does want you to get involved in the unloading without pay if the guy is going to help you, because imay, and with it if he's not willing to help. So the Gemara is now going to try to prove from five different brayos. Well, we haven't proved one way or the other. We still have it up in the air. Maybe you can say it's d'oraisa.
Seems likely.
It may be, but maybe not. You could understand it that it's d'oraisa. You could understand that not. So now the Gemara is going to bring in five different brayos that we're going to try to prove this one way or the other. The simon, behemas, oihev, sonu, rabson. These are the key words of each of these five brachos. So, lema messiah. Okay, so Rava was the one who started off by saying that tzad b'alachayim d'oraisa. Fine, we don't have a proof so far. Now, can we say we found a proof for him? A brachos says like this: behemas, oihev, kachavim, metapel, bakim, behemas, Yisrael. An animal of a goy, which is overburdened, you have to take care of it just as you would the animal of a Jew. So, if you say that Tzad b'alachayim is an issue d'oraisa, that's why you're obligated to help, because the animal is having tzad just as much, no matter who its owner is. Why should he be obligated to help just as if it was a yid? After all, the pasuk does say, ochicha.
In the one in Mishpatim,
it mentions Sainacha. We'll get to that soon, but the one in Kisete at least mentions ochicha. Yeah.
Meaning Jewish.
Yeah. The answer is no. Hasam mishum eva. No. When the braisa says you have to help a goy just as you would a yid, doesn't mean you chayev on a d'oraisa level. means you have to help him because otherwise there may be an issue of Ava, that the Goy is going to resent and start feeling anti-Semitic. Like, look at this, you know, the Jews help each other, but they don't help they don't help us. Sort of Indian, but it's an Indian, by the way. I once read a cute thing where a guy once stops on the side of the road. He sees a car is stolen. He goes to help. The guy over there, the driver of the stolen car, is wearing a yarmulke. Yeah. But other than that, he doesn't really look particularly Jewish. The Yid helps him out, but he asks him, I'm curious, are you really Jewish or not? The guy says, no. The Yid who stopped to help asks, the guy, I'm curious, by the way, I asked the guy, are you Jewish? He says, actually, no, but I have noticed that Jews are more willing to help their own, and therefore I took along this yarmulke with me, and I keep it as a spare in case I get in a situation like this.
I was sorry about that. My mother told me, when we get caught, take the yarmulke,
they always
start
with.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Anyway. The Gemara says, Hachi Nami Mestabra. In fact, this seems logical to say that it's a matter of Eva and not a matter of Tzav Baal Chaim. Because the Braisa continues, im hoisa tuuna yayin osir ein zakukla. If the animal is carrying wine which is osir, namely yayin nesach, then you don't have to bother with it. So iyam v'shlema lav daraisa. If you say that tzav baal chaim is not daraisa, okay, mishum hachi ein zakukla. Therefore, you don't have to get involved because the issue of yayin nesach is dirabanan. If you're going to say tzav baal chaim is also dirabanan, fine. One dirabanan cancels out another one. The Rabbanon don't want you to get yain. Actually, I should say, I mean yain nesach. To drink yain nesach that was actually poured out in honor of an avodah zarah is also midaraita. But all the other things that we mostly when we talk about yain nesach, carrying it, helping to load or unload it, and also stam yainam, where it's just wine that was touched by a goy and not necessarily used as a libation to avodah zarah, all that is only also midrabbanon. So if you're going to say Tzav Baal Chaim,
if you're a Jew working for a winery, you're going
we'll to learn in Masechet Avodah Zarah. We're going to learn next year, Bez Hashem, or in a year and a half or so, we're going to learn Masechet Avodah Zarah. We will talk about it at great, great length. Don't you worry. Okay.
A year and a half.
If you want to look it up ahead of time, you can find it in your day. Okay. So if you say that Tzav Baal Chaim is not Daraisa, fine. One Dirabanan cancels out another, and therefore that's it. You say, in other words, usually you would have to help because Tzav Baal Chaim is Dirabanan. In this case, because there's Yain Nesach involved, which is also for you to be dealing with Dirabanan, therefore, fine. Eli, I'm a Daraisa, I'm Ayin Zokoklo, but if you're going to say that Tzav Baal Chaim is Daraisa, why shouldn't you help? Why should the Isser Dirabanan, why should the problem Dirabanan of getting involved with Yain Nesach override the Isser of Tzav Baal Chaim Daraisa? The answer is no. No, because maybe the Braita means, as far as reloading it with wine that's also, then you don't have to bother. In other words, to take off, no matter what, even if it's Yain Netzach, you have to help because Tzav Baal Chaim, because Tzav Baal Chaim may well be Daraisa. To reload it, there is already no tzar for the animal, there's just chisar and kiss for the guy, so then you don't have to bother. You can even if there's an issue of Ava, you can fob it off with an excuse. Look, this stuff is also for me to handle, and it's off limits for me to handle, and therefore I'm sorry I can't.
So you change the wording,
it's kind of
what's a tuna? No, it was previously loaded with Yain Nesef. You helped the guy unload it. Now, to reload it with that same Yain Nesef, you're not obligated to.
And it wouldn't be either, because
because again, you could tell him easily enough. Look, you know, Yain, I helped you to unload, but I'm sorry. Other than that, Yain Netzach is against my religious principle.
It's not for him; it's for the guy.
Yeah, but still, yeah.
Guess I'm paid.
No, but even though you can't be paid for work involving Yain Netzach. That's another thing we'll learn about. Nobody's on it. Okay. So no proof one way or the other from that. Tashma. Let's try the other one. Also Behemas. Behemas over Gachavim Masu Yisrael. Now. When the Torah introduces it in Parashas Mishpatim, I was quoting the passage before, the Torah says, you see the animal collapsing under the burden, v'chadalta me'azovloi. V'chadalta literally means you should hold back. So again, it's sort of like the lashon that we had v'salamta by a lost object, where we said, in context, the passage means you're not allowed to hide you, you're not allowed to ignore it. But nevertheless, we doubt that it's meant also in a positive sense. Sometimes v'salamta, sometimes you should ignore it, like if you're a kohen and it's a basic verse. We do the same thing over here with v'chadalta. Even though in context, the pasuk is saying, you would think to hold back from helping him, don't, ozev tazev iman. But nevertheless, since the Torah phrases it that way, v'chadalta, as a positive statement, then it comes to tell us that in some cases, yes, v'chadalta, you hold back from doing it. Namely, behemas ovi kachavim umasi yisrael v'chadalta, that if the animal belongs to a goy, but the burden on it belongs, the packages on it belong to a yid, then v'chabdalta, then you're allowed to hold back from help. Now, it should be oziv tazev, because he's still a tzav alachayim, regardless who the owner of the animal is. The answer is again, no, because again, you could say that this braisa is talking about the mitzvah of reloading it. Reloading it again, you're allowed to chadalta, you're allowed to hold back because it's a goy's animal. So if there's no issue of eva, and then in fact, the Rosh, I think, says that we said before, if there's only an issue of eva, fine, you can have a time, for example, when Yad Yisrael Takifa, you can have a time when Jewish people have the upper hand in the country or whatever, therefore there's not going to be an issue of eva. And then
hopefully,
and then yeah. So then you could get away with it. They talk about another possibility. Also, maybe there's less of an issue of Ava over here because the goy can think to himself, or you can make an excuse to the goy, or the goy can make an excuse to himself, or whatever. That look, you know, I mean, they're not even necessarily helping their own guys because as we're going to say in a second, that we're talking about whether it's a goyish junkie driver or a Jewish one. So they don't even when a Jew's merchandise is involved, they don't necessarily help. How much more so? I can't expect them to help me. Something like that. Okay, so we could say we're talking about Tina. Okay, you want to say the Hachi Emes Sefer. Fine, if you're going to say that, it's talking about Tina. What about the continuation of the Braisa? The Hemes Yisrael Master Ovid Kuchavim Ozev Tazer. That, if it's an animal that belongs to a Jew, but the burden on it, the packages belong to a goy, then Ozev Tazer, then you talk after help. The Ibatina, my Ozev Tazer. If it's reloading the animal, if it's packages of a goy, why should you have to help out? The answer is no, that's different. Mishum Tzair to Israel, fine, but there you have the Yid Tzair. The Yid is stuck over there with he's stuck over there. He can't have anybody help him reload up the packages, and he needs to continue doing his taxi service.
On the corner.
Yeah. Fifth question is, fine, then why don't you say in the first case also, L'chora, if we're talking about Behemoth, in the first case, we're talking about Behemoth Erd Kuchov, Masi Yisrael, L'chora, there's a Jew involved also, a Jew is going to have Tzair, that his packages are lying over there in the street, so what do you mean, B'chadalta? The answer is no. Reisha b'chamat b'choma or b'kuchavim sefer b'chamat b'chamo Yisrael. The first part of the braisa is talking about that not only the animal belongs to the goy, but so does the junkie driver is also a goy. The second one, we're talking about an animal of a Jew and a burden belonging to a goy. It's talking about the junkie driver is a yid as well.
Why shouldn't be parallel? We say what?
My paska. So the question is, what makes you definitively say that? Who says that every time there's a goyisha animal, it's going to be a goyisha, there's going to be a goyisha junkie driver and vice versa? The answer is, stomach de mils to inish basa chamre. Usually a person goes along with his donkey. So therefore, yes, if it's a goyish donkey, mistama, the goyisha owner himself goes along in order to lead the donkey and take care of it and whatever. And the same thing if it's a yid donkey, mistama, it's a yid who's doing the driving of the donkey. So there, yeah.
Look, nowadays you have different dogs. You have a goyish driver driving a truck for a yid.
Yeah, but obviously it's different. I mean, with an animal where it's a living creature and you have to know its moods and whatever, it helps. If you're the animal, if you're the owner of it, you take care of it. Okay, but this whole braisa mentioned v'chadalta, then I mentioned oziv tazev. Both of those psukim are both of those words are in Parshas Mishpatim, and Parshas Mishpatim we established is talking about prika, about unloading the animal. Kiseite talks about tina. So what are you telling me that the whole braisa is talking about the question of reloading the animal, and it's only a question of tzairid Yisrael or not? It's talking about prika, where the tzav alachayim involved as well. That should prove that Tzav Alachayim is not Daraisa, because otherwise there wouldn't be a difference. The answer is, Omalei, actually, I'm sorry, it says it should be Ella, really, Homani Rabbi Yisya Glili. No, because you could say that this Braisa is according to Rabbi Yisya Glili, Dharma Tzav Alachayim Lav Daraisa. He says that Tzav Alachayim is not an issue Daraisa. As we said before, actually, therefore Rabbi Yisya Glili had said if the animal is overburdened, you don't have to help at all, not even Beschar. Because he holds Tzav Alachayim is Dirabonim. Doesn't mean the Chachamim have to agree the same way. Fine, this Braisa can be talking. Yes, so this Braisa can be talking according to him.
And if Dirabonim doesn't have to help?
What?
If Dirabonim doesn't have to help?
No, he doesn't have to help. Well, but then there can be exceptions. Yeah. So there can be exceptions. The Dirabonim themselves are willing to override the issue of Tzav Alachayim in certain cases, where the animal is overburdened, because then the guy himself was being careless in it, for example, Well, we said before, Rabbi Yossi Agluvi would say that even for pay, you don't have to do it.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
Unless the Torah mentions it.
Well, that's the thing. That would be, yeah. Okay, Toshma. Oihev lifrit v'sonali. Don't a Brisa says that if you have two people who need help, you have your friend who needs his animal unloaded, and you have your enemy whose animal needs to be reloaded up. Mitzvah v'sonali. Then it's a mitzvah to help your enemy first. Could they lock off with Yitzhak in order to control your Yitzhak?
I love the animal, sir.
And if he kills you?
No, we're not talking about kind of, come on, Sonu. We're not talking about Sonu who's going to kill you. Why would he kill you? If you're helping
Sonu.
If he's helping you. Okay, so what kind of Sonu are we talking about? Tosfos actually points out that when you get down to it, the Gemara in Pesachim asks, 20 minutes, it says, Lo-sisna sechicha b'l-vavachi, you're not to hate another Yid. How is it possible that there's a case of a Sonu anyway?
Right.
So the Gemara answers over there actually that you're talking about somebody who you're allowed to hate up Yalacha. Namely, you one person saw him do an Avera, so there's not enough evidence to bring him to base, and you need two Aiden for that. But because you saw him do the Avera, you're entitled to hate him. As the Altareba says in Tanya, you still have to have Rachmanos on how it lowers the Shama fell, etc. But you're allowed to. Not a Moser, we're not talking about, but we're talking about, in other words, that might be different. A Moser, we said before, we learned at the end of Bava Kamma, even his life is forfeit. We talk about it in this moment over there, maybe it's not forfeit only because it'll go to his children, but that's it. So actually, Tosfos asks the question over here, then what's the lock of his history? What do you mean you should help him in order to control your Yetzirah? The whole point is you're allowed to hate him off the Torah. So Tosfos over here gives the answer that maybe we're not talking about, maybe we are talking about that even though you're not allowed to hate another Yid, let's say for whatever reason you do, then you have to control your Yetzirah and overcome it. By the way, there's a story, I think, there's a story in the Yerushalmi about how it once happened, Taka, there were two people who were on the outs with each other, for whatever reason. Eventually it happened. One of them was going with an animal. The animal started collapsing under the burden. The other guy comes, and at first he's thinking, why should I bother helping him? He's my enemy. Then he remembers that's exactly what the Torah says. And you got to help him. So he goes and he doesn't want to talk to the guy, whatever, but fine, I'll go help him. Fine, it's a mitzvah. I got to do it. Naturally, in the course of it, you inevitably have to at least give each other instructions or whatever, they're still not talking as friends. I think the story was actually they had once been friends, and then they had a falling out. Anyway, whatever, afterwards, the owner of the animal was great. So whatever, he helped. Afterwards, after they get everything put back together, the owner of the animal sort of turns to him and says, thank you for doing me that favor. You want to come, I'll treat you to lunch. And the other guy, fine, I'm willing. And they were able to patch it up again. So because of the mitzvah, they were out.
Okay.
Yeah, there was that. Right. Okay. Anyway, Tosfos and Pesachim give a different interesting answer. Kamayim aponim is a famous thing. The way you feel towards another person, that other person feels towards you. So what happens? Reuven sees Shimon do an Avera. Fine. He has a right, up his Torah, to hate Shimon. However, what's going to happen? Because Reuven hates Shimon for a valid reason, Shimon is going to end up hating Reuven for a non-valid reason. Lokof of history doesn't mean to control Reuven's Yetzirah. It means to control Shimon's Yetzirah. Because in order to keep it from spiraling out of control. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so if he's talking about Tzav Balachayim Daraisa, if you're going to tell me that Tzav Balachayim is an issue Daraisa, Ha'adiflei, Lachorda, Lifreik is more important because the animal is suffering, so why should you go help the enemy first? The answer is, Afilohochi, Kadeh Lokof is Yitzri Adif. True, but still, the point about controlling the Yetzirah is a more important thing. That's an example. We're covered of a person, or in this case, covered of the Eivishter, to control your Yetzirah and prevent the hate from spiraling out of control is more important than Tzav Balachayim. Toshma, Brayson number 4, Sone Sha'omru, this enemy that we're talking about, Sone Yisrov, like Sone of Kachavim, is talking about a Yid that you hate, not a Goy that you hate. So, Yamat Tzav Balachayim Doraisa, Mali Sone Yisrov, Mali Sone of Kachavim. If Tzav Balachayim is Doraisa, what's the difference? So, if it's a Goy that you hate, the animal is still suffering just as much. The answer is misavret asone de krokoi. You think that this brisa is talking about the sone in the pasuk, where, as we said, that the only reason the Torah would allow you to hate another yid is if you saw in him a dvar erva or whatever. Asone de masnisin koi. It's actually referring back to the previous brisa that mentioned a sone, where that sone and that brisa is not necessarily one, as Tosfos said over here. It's not necessarily talking about the kind of sona that you're allowed to hate. We're talking about you illegally hating him. But the fact is, you hate him, and therefore you would think not to help him, and the Torah says you got to help him. Chinam, chinam, basically. Or not even chinam. Maybe you have a reason to hate him, whatever, but not a reason that's valid off the Torah. So not a reason not necessarily, but whatever. The point is that, therefore, the Braisa then is qualifying that and saying, if there is such a person that you hate, not for a valid reason, alpitoto, whether it's sin askinim or whatever you want to call it, if it's a guy, you taka don't have a mitzvah to help it. So the point is also, we're referring back to the previous Braisa, litzoyin, that we're talking about to reload the animal. Fine, reloading the animal. Again, there's no tzav alachai involved. Toshma, roivitz v'loy rabbi. Well, they're talking about when you're reloading it, you reload it properly. Toshma, roivitz v'loy rabbi, son. When the pasuk says, we're going to dash in the individual words in the pasuk. The pasuk says roivitz, that the animal is lying down, implying v'loy rabbi, son. It's just it's a one-time thing that this time it couldn't handle it and it laid down under the stress of it. The loyd rabson, not an animal that regularly makes a habit of lying down when you load it up. You're not chayev to help in such a case. So I don't know, a cow, whatever. There's some animals that are naturally lazy like that. Every time you load them up, they'll naturally, you know, they'll stubborn, or a mule or whatever, they'll stubbornly lay down. That's the implication is you're not obligated to help in that case. Roivet, also when the pasuk says roivet, that it's lying down, implying it's not talking about if the animal is still standing with the burden. You don't have the mitzvah of krika in that case because the animal is still able to stand. The word tachas masoi, first of all, teaches you that it means not if the animal is already unloaded. Then you don't have. Now we're going to ask, you know, the Gemara is going to ask in a couple of lines, what about tina? We'll get back to that. And tachas masoi means matzah shiyocha lamadai. And tachas masoi, as Rabbi Yitzchak Lewy said of the Mishnah, means the kind of burden that's appropriate for it. Again, the amat tzaba alachayim deraisa, mali roivitz, mali rabson. If it's an issue of tzaba alachayim deraisa, who cares even if the animal regularly lies down? Or who cares even if it's standing, mali rabson or mali oimid? Who cares if it's still able to stand? It's still having tzar in either case. Now,
if it normally lays down, then it doesn't die in tzar.
No, but it's still laying down because it's still...
Because of the masa,
yeah. It's still overburdened, yeah. Okay, Tosfos points out, the Gemara could easily answer that we're talking about the Sechinam versus the Schar, that's not so much we want to find a new answer. The Gemara is going to go on to say that this Braisa is more logically only according to Rabbi Yisrael Grili. And again, Rabbi Yisrael Grili holds the Tzav HaLachayim as the Rabbanah. That's the answer. Halmani Rabbi Yisrael Grili. He draws a Tzav HaLachayim as the Rabbanah. And indeed, Hochinami Mistabra, that seems logical to say
the
Braisa. We can say that it's logical to Katani Tachas Masoi Matash Yohalam, because it mentions this concept where we dash in Tachas Masoi to mean a load that's appropriate for this animal. And if it's overburdened more than the normal amount, you're not chayav to do anything with it. Man Shamit Lady Isle, Hai Swara. So which Tana have we found of the various Tanaim that deal with this? Which Tana mentioned this concept? Rabbi Yisrael Grili. That was Rabbi Yisrael Grili in our Mishnah. Shmamina, therefore that proves that the Braisa must be like Rabbi Yisrael Grili, and therefore you could say, fine, he holds in general Tzav HaLachayim D'Rabbanan. So fine, he would distinguish between Roivitz and Rabson. The Chachamim might not.
Right.
Okay, the question is, V'akatani Sefer Tachas Maseh V'loi Mefurach. Fine, but the Braisa can... Oh, sorry. Umi Motis Mukmas like Rabbi Yisrael Grili. How can you say that the Braisa is according to Rabbi Yisrael Grili? V'akatani Sefer Tachas Maseh V'loi Mefurach. The Braisa continued that that you only have to help if it's under its load, meaning not if it's unloaded. And you have to ask, my loy mefurach, what do you mean that you're not obligated to help if it's unloaded? Ilay meloy mefurach klal, do you mean you're not obligated to do anything as far as the reloading? Haksiv hakim talkimimai. What about the pasuk in Kisei that talks about helping it back up with its burden? Elav shita, it must obviously mean loy mefurach b'chinam elav eskar. Must mean, when it says loy tachas masoi v'loy mefurach, means if it was tachas masoi, if it was actually still the burden was on it, you'd have to help for free. Like this one, it's already unloaded, you only have to help with pay. Now, man shamat leidis b'hai svara rabbanon. And it's the rabbanon of our Mishnah that have that svara, because Rav Shimon was the one who said that you have to do them both for free. L'chura, we would assume that this braisa is going completely all according to one tana. So there it sounds like, no, the Chachamim. The Chachamim. And if it's the Chachamim, we're trying to prove where
the
Chachamim
right.
say that Ki'ina can be done for pay. So,
okay,
yes, but that's what we're saying. That's what the Braisa effectively would be saying, if we understand it that way. The Loim of Furuk, that if the animal is already unloaded, and you're talking about reloading it, you're not obligated to do it for free. You're allowed to charge for it, which would be according to the Chachamim. The answer is no. No, you could say this Braisa is like Rabbi Yisrael Grili. When it comes to reloading, the question of whether reloading you're allowed to charge for or not, he would hold like the Rabbanon, not like Rabbi Shimon. So you have three different opinions. In other words, you have the Chachamim. You have the Chachamim who say Prika is who say Tzav Al Chaim is Zoraisa, and Prika therefore has to be done for free because of Tzav Al Chaim. Keina can be done for pay. Reb Shimon would say I agree with that basic principle, except since the Torah itself doesn't clarify which one is talking about Prika and which one is talking about Keina, and therefore we can't use your Kal Vachomer. We end up saying both of them have to be done for Chinam. And Reb Yosi Agvili would say Tzav Al Chaim is also Zoraisa, and Reb Yosi Agvili would say Tzav Al Chaim is Derabbanan. However, I agree with the Chachamim that when it comes to reloading, you can pay, you can charge for. When it comes to unloading, I agree that you have to do it for free because not because of Tzav Al Chaim, because you hold up the Derabbanan, but rather because of Chisorin Kit, because the animal is going to break down. Tanan Abbanan. We learn in a Braisa to finish up the dinim of Prikotina. The Pasuk says, Ki Sira, if you see. Now, Yochel Afilu Mirochek, you would think that means even if you see it from a great, from a far distance, maybe you have to walk. Kisira, if you see the animal collapsing, yes. Yochel Afilu Mirochek, you would think even if it means you're far away, you see it from a mile away, maybe you have to walk over. Yeah, you will have to walk over, maybe.
A mile?
Tamad Loima, Kisifka. Therefore, the Pasuk says, Kisifka, if you bump into it, literally. E Kisifka Yochel Pagia Mamish, but on the other hand, Kisifka, if it only said that, would mean literally you bump into it, not from any distance at all. If you're even a few feet away, maybe you wouldn't have to. Tamad Loima, Kisira. So therefore, it says Kisira. So you have both. Now, so it has to be both. It has to be a little bit of both. Now, mind you, those psukim, Kisira and Kisifka, actually are talking about the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. They're not talking about Prika Tina at all. So Agoris Agra on the side of it here changes it to refer to not Kisira, but rather Loisira, which is talking about the case, which is the pasuk Loisira, which is the pasuk from Kisete that's talking about Keina. On the other hand, a number of other Rishonim point out, we talked about on Daf Lamed Aleph, that there is a certain connection between Aveda and Prikotina. You know, all of them involve saving another Yid's money. And in fact, we thought, therefore, maybe the Torah could have told us one and we'd learn the other ones from it. Therefore, yes, you can have words, Kisira and Kisifka, that refer to Aveda, but we can darshan them as talking about Prikotina. Yeah. So, so what is considered where you see it, but it's close enough to be considered that you actually bumped into them? Shiru Chachamim Echad Meshevo Mechtemamil. The Chachamim estimated that is 1/7.5, meaning 2/15 of a mil. Vizehu Rith. This is the amount of distance that's called a Rith. The definition of it is 266 2/3 amos.
Echad Meshevo Mechtemamil.
Meaning you divide a mil, which is 2,000 amos, it's 7.5, and that's the figure. It's called a Rith. Tosfos mentioned the Girsa that maybe instead of a Rus, maybe it's called a Rus, because Rus, Reish Vav Samach, has a gematria 266. Yossel Keller once told me an interesting theory that he came up with. Where did they get such an odd figure for a unit of measurement like this? A Rus? It's not the only place. There's a couple of other places in Shas where the unit is measured. Where did they get such an odd figure? He thought like this. He said an Amma is the definition of it is the length of your arm from your elbow to the tip of your finger. That's about 1.5 feet, give or take. There must have been a measurement in those days that was similar to our foot, maybe not exactly 12 inches like we have it, but something like that. There would have been a relationship of 2 to 3, let's say. 3 feet, 3 of those feet would equal 2 amos. If you calculate like that, then this wrist of 266 and change or whatever comes out to 400 feet, which is a nice round number. So maybe that's where they got the concept.
400 feet is not a simple thing.
But it's not so far either. I mean, look, in terms of a crown heights block over here, it's a bit over half a block. It's not that
feet
much.
Is half a block.
About so your average block over here, your average long block over here is about 700. It's about 700 odd feet. Yeah.
Where's the post Kisifka?
So Kisifka is Kisifka Shoro Yukoi Hamara Toya.
It's a connection with other some Kisira that.
Well, that's the thing. Again, so Agoris Agra changes it to Loisira, and then Kisifka, which is the two psukim that are in Parshas Kisete.
Kisete also.
It's all in Kisete, but otherwise, you would have to say Kisifka can also be the one from Mishpatim. No, that's Kisira, rather. No, Kisifka is only in Kisete, and then Kisira. Kisira would be either the one would be either the Kisira is in Shmos, Loisira is in Kisete. But the difference is Kisira is talking about Hashavas Aveda. Kisira is talking about Prika. But Loisifka Kisifka is talking about Hashavas Aveda.
So you learn one.
So you learn one from the other, according to many Rishonim.
Okay.
Tana, we learn in a braisa, umadade imay ad parsa. Once you've finished reloading the animal, you have to continue walking along with the owner of the animal for another parsa, which is 4 mil, to make sure if it does it, to make sure it doesn't fall, to make sure it doesn't get unbalanced and fall off again. That you're entitled to take schar for that walking along with him. Yeah.
Everybody agrees to that?
You might be walking out to save your house.
So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, time.
Okay, I don't know if we'll get to the end of the parish, but we'll do what we can. We'll see what we can do in the next few minutes. Okay. Mishnah says, Avedose v'avedas aviv, if you have your own lost object, which you need to arrange to bring back, and your father's aveda, Avedos Kedemus. Your Aveda comes ahead of your father's. Avedos of Avedis Rabbi. Similarly, if you have your Aveda. Ahead of your father's, yeah.
What's that? What's Kibbutz?
We'll see why in the Gemara. Wait. Avedos of Avedis Rabbi. Similarly, if your Aveda versus your Rebbe's Aveda. Shaloi Kedem, also yours comes first. What about Avedos of Avedis Rabbi? What about if you have your father's lost object and your Rebbe's lost object? Which one do you take care of first? Shal Rabbi Kedemus, your Rebbe's one comes first. Because your father brought you into this world, and your Rebbe, who teaches you Chachma, which we'll talk about in the Gemara, what that means to teach you Chachma, brings you into the life of Olam Haba. So therefore, it's more important. Your own comes first. That your own comes first, but that's when it talks between your Rebbe and your father, yeah. The im aviv chacham, however, if his father himself is a chacham, shall aviv kodemus, then his father's comes first, because his father, as a chacham, the Stama taught him as well. There's a girsa over here that's brought, the Hagoros HaGrub brings a girsa from the Rif, that it's not just chacham, it has to be shokol k'neged Rabbi, that the father is on an equal level with the Rebbe. Only then would we say the father
in
comes
knowledge.
First. In knowledge, yeah. Another case, so what if his father and his Rebbe were each carrying a burden, and they both need to be helped with unloading and reloading it on themselves? Again, you help your Rebbe first, and then your father. A third case, what if both of them are captive, are captives in jail or whatever? Again, you do pity and shvuyim for your Rebbe first and then your father. And if his father is a chacham, then first he brings out his father and then his Rebbe. Here, by the way, there's no different girsa. Everybody has the girsa chacham. So the Radvaz explains like this. The reason why the Mishnah had to tell us three different cases, and the reason why in the second case it didn't tell us anything about whether the father is a chacham or equal to the Rebbe or not is like this. The first case, you're only talking about an issue of mammon, basically, his aveda. It's not affecting him personally. Therefore, the Rif would hold. In order to put your father ahead of your father has to actually be equal to your Rebbe in Chachma, in order for him to go ahead of your Rebbe. Otherwise, your Rebbe goes first. The last case, where they're both in jail, it's a matter of vizayin to their own body. Therefore, ordinarily, it's true, your Rebbe goes first, but your father doesn't have to be equal to your Rebbe in order for him to come first. The fact that he's a Chacham is reason enough for him to go ahead of your Rebbe. The middle case that Radvaz says the Mishnah left open, because the Tana himself wasn't sure what is it more similar to. On the one hand, it's not vizayin of his group. He's not about to be badly treated or whatever in jail. On the other hand, he's carrying a master, and it's a burden for him. Therefore, the Mishnah left it open because whatever you do, take your pick. Because if your father is a chacham or shokul or whatever, is only a chacham but not shokul connected rabbi, because you really have no way of telling which one to do first.
When you redeem the rabbi, is it because of the future that he's going to teach him or the past that he has?
The mashas of the past that you owe him covered for having brought you. L'chayel amabaya. Where do we get this that we just said that your Aveda comes ahead of everybody else? And the Pasuk says, nevertheless, there should not be among you a poor person. You, meaning yourself, don't allow yourself to become poor. Therefore, your thing comes ahead of everybody else's. However, therefore yours comes ahead even of your father's or your Rebbe. However,
you become poor by
now, if you allow your Aveda to get lost, then you're gonna be allowing yourself to become poor. You can't do that. However, it's true. Technically you do have that din. However, if a person does in himself like that, the person should go lifnim mishuras hadin. And if he doesn't, he's always careful of every last bit I have to get. I can never allow myself to lose anything. Seif baldi dekach, he's going to wind up tak and needing. He's going to wind up tak being poor and needing tzedakah. Among the different other explanations by this, on this, by the way, Maharshal says, "Kol makayim ba'asmekach," as a person specifically says, "I need to take care of my aveda first, because otherwise I'll become poor." Well, then he's opening up his mouth to the sultan. You're mentioning becoming poor. You know, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad idea. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, "Hoyo over v'rabe noisin basi." The Chulah, we said that if your father and your Rebbe are carrying burdens, so we said your Rebbe comes first unless your father is a Chacham, and we mentioned Rabbi Shalimde Chachma. So Tana Rabbanan, Rabbi Shomru, this Rebbe that we're talking about is Rabbi Shalimde Chachma, v'lo Rabbi Shalimde Mikro Mishnah. It means your Rebbe who taught you Chachma. Chachma meaning Rashi explains basically Gemara, understanding the reasons behind the Mishnah. Reconciling the Mishnayos, understanding why this thing is also in Heter. It's basically the Gemara, yeah. V'loy Rabbi Shalim the Mikro Mishnah, but not your Rebbe who taught you Tanakh or Mishnayos. That's not considered your Rebbe. Diri Rebbe. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a kosher roiv chachma se'emen. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's whoever you learn most of your chachma from. Whatever your chachma is, whether your chachma is Tanakh or Mishnah or Gemara, whatever you learn most from a person, yeah. There is, by the way, an interesting thing that the Ramah brings, and then Darchei Moshe that Ramah brings from Sefer Chassidim, that this only applies to a Rebbe who teaches you for free. A Rebbe who teaches you for pay is no different than any other worker. He's not considered Rabbi Shalim Bechachmai. Rabbi Yossi, I'm asking you. You're not allowed. Well, we learned in Nedarim, there's certain things you're allowed to charge for, but I mean, besides that also, I mean, nowadays, Kabbalah, yeah, he could have been doing all the work, yeah. Rabbi Yossi, I'm afraid of like, hey, you're enem, elav Mishnah achas, dehu rabbi. Rabbi Yossi says, even if he only enlightened your eyes, he taught you the understanding of one Mishnah, that itself, zehu rabbi, that's enough to be considered your rabbi. Omar Rabbi. Omar Rabbi, kagoyin Rabbi Tzachorah, da'azbara, mzuha melistroin. For example, I can give an example. Rabbi Tzachorah explained to me the meaning of the term zuha melistroin. It's a term mentioned in a couple of places in Masechta Kehilim. A zuha melistroin is a double-ended tool that's used with soup. One end of it is a spoon that you use to stir the soup and move the scummy stuff or whatever to the side, and the other one is a fork to take out the vegetables and whatnot. So it talks about it as far as the dinim of tumah v'tahara, the breaks, etc. I didn't know what a zuah melistrin is, and Rav Schoira explained it to me. So therefore, in that sense, he's my rebbe. The Gemara tells Shmuel Kara Monei.
You don't need much.
I mean, you don't need much, yeah. Mind you, I mean, there are a number of places in Shas where Rava learned something from Rav Schoira. So Tosfos and other Rishonim talk about a few possibilities. What we mean over here, he only taught me the one thing. It means even if he only taught me the one thing, it means Rava said this after that was the first thing he had learned from Rav Schoira, but later on he learned other things from him, etc. There's a few different answers.
Take care of us, a few
days. Yeah. Shmuel Kara Monei Alei Ma'ahud Rabbanan Da'azberei. Shmuel ripped his clothing for Kriya for a certain Tamar Chacham who taught him the following, who explained to him the meaning of the following Mishnah. Echad Yored L'Amas HaShechi V'Echad Peseach Kevan. This is a Mishnah in Talmud that describes the daily routine in the Bais Mikdash. The gates, or the front gates of the Heichal were locked. So the front of the Heichal, the Ulam, had a curtain over it. There was no door over there. But inside that, to get into the actual Heichal, there were doors there that were locked at night. In the morning, somebody has to come and open them. He goes through one of the side chambers over there, the Toyim. He goes through a pishbush, which is a narrow, small door, into the cell, and from there he walks through a passageway over there to get to the gates and unlocks them from the inside. How did he get in there in the first place? Echad Yored B'Amas HaShechi. So Rashi explains that he had two keys. One of them he has to reach all the way in. He has to reach all the way through a hole in the wall near the door in this little pishbuk. He reaches all the way in until his armpit, shechi means the armpit, and reaches to the lock over there and unlocks it from the inside. And then the echad peseach kevan, and the other one he just opened straight because it was a normal lock where you just have the lock right in front. So like he carried the keys with him. The one lock was made in such a way you couldn't reach it very easily from the outside because they didn't just want people wandering in at any time. So therefore, like this, they made the lock was difficult to reach. You'd have to reach all the way down through a hole in the wall, and then you'd reach with the key the lock over there and unlock it. That's the Peseach Kevan, and the other one opens straight out. So therefore, with this person,
yeah, the key falls off.
This is true. Yeah, I'm sure they had stairs, but
they had a string.
Oh, okay. So this person explained this mission to Shmuel, and therefore Shmuel tore Kriya for him. What kind of Kriya? Now, normally the Gemara mentions in Marikot, you tear Kriya for any time a Chacham passes away. So what happened over here? Rashi says we're talking about over here the kind of kriya that you tear Rahman al-Aflan for parents or your rabbi Muvok or whatever, the kind where you never sew it up permanently again. So even though he only taught him this one thing, the Ramban disagrees with that. The Ramban says, no, we mean a regular kera. The difference is that concept that you rip to a Talmud Chacham is only a Talmud Chacham who is at least as great as you. This person, according to the Ramban, was much lesser than Shmuel. Normally, Shmuel should not have to say a kriya for him at all. But because he taught him the meaning of this Mishnah, therefore he tore a regular kriya for him. But afterwards, after Shiva or Shloshim or what have you, he sewed it completely back up. The Talmud Chachamim in Bavel, they stand up out of respect for each other because they're always sitting in the Beis Medrash together and asking questions and answering. So therefore, everybody learns from everybody else. Everybody is sort of everybody else together. So whenever another one would walk in, they would all stand. They'd stand up in his honor. Yeah, like we learn in Kiddushim that you're supposed to do for your Rebbe. So they would stand up for each other. The Koren Zelzer, they would also tear kriya for each other. Again, because they taught each other. However, when it came to a question of an Aveda, where there's a conflict between returning one of their Avedas and returning his father's Aveda, then they would only do that, only a Rabbi Muvok, like we said before. Then they would have him override their father, but not just another Talmud Chacham in the Beis Medrash. Even though they learned a lot from him, that can't override the covenant for their father. Kaboy Minei Rav Chista Mirabun. Rav Chista asked Rav Huna the following question. Rav Chista was a Talmud Chaver of Rav Huna. He was a Talmud, but also they were kind of colleagues. And there was, in particular, there were details of things that Rav had taught and other Amiroyim had taught that Rav Chista knew that Rav Huna did not. Therefore, Rav Chista asked Rav Huna, Talmud, tzarech le-rabbe, my, what about a Talmud whose Rebbe needs him? Like in this case, for example, he didn't say explicitly about himself, but basically, you need me because there are things that I know that I've learned from Rav or whatever which you haven't. Amalei, so Rav Huna was offended by that, and he says, "Chista, chista, loy tzricha lach. I don't need you. At tzrichasli ad aboyim shnin. You need me up to 40 years because aboyim shnin. It takes 40 years to fully understand what you're ever taught. Ad aboyim shnin lekoyenish, the famous thing. Therefore, ikbedi adadi. Now, because of this, they both were offended at each other. And they did not go to see each other. Wow. Marsha actually says it even more strongly. He says that Aboyin Shnin is referring to the second part, is referring to the next sentence. He says, you need me. And Ad Aboyin Shnin ikbedi adadi. For the next 40 years, they were offended at each other, Marsha learned. So the Gemara continues, Yosef Rav Chista Aboyin Tanis, Simishim Becholosh Daita Dirahona. Rav Chista then started fasting a series of 40 fasts for making Rav Huna feel bad. And Rav Huna, Yosef Rav Huna Aboyin Tanis, Simishim Dechashtir Rav Chista. And Rav Huna sat 40 fasts for having been choshed Rav Chista, because maybe he meant himself, but maybe not.
They could have spoken to one another, not the fast.
But still, they yeah.
And what happened?
I don't know. That's the Gemara doesn't
have much.
History doesn't record what happened. According to Marsha, it's 40 years. According to the Pshat, as most other Mefarshim understand in the Gemara, it just means that he's saying for the next 40 years you're going to need me. But the Ikbad Adari, for some time they were offended each other. Maybe they patched it up not long after that. You know, it could also be even according to Marsha that it lasted for 40 years, maybe it doesn't mean necessarily they didn't see each other for the next 40 years. Maybe it just means, like, Ivy and Gabi Adjari, they wouldn't go visit each other, let's say, but they'd still, they'd see each other in the Beis Medrash and still continue learning.
Is that the source where we say that, it takes 40 years to reach the understanding of your
mind? So that's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara actually learns it from a pasuk, that at the end of Parashas Kisavah, Moshe tells the Jewish people that only now, after 40 years, they've not given you a heart to understand and ears to hear and eyes to see until this day, because it takes 40 years to fully comprehend what your Rebbe taught you. Itmar. So now they said, okay, so we had a three-way machlokas before. What's considered your Rebbe? Is it the one who taught you Chochma? Is it the one that you learned most of your Chochma, whatever kind of Chochma it is, from? Or is it that you learned even one, the explanation of one Mishnah from? So, Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yoitz, Amar Rav Yechanan, Halacha Kerav Yehuda, that he says the halacha is like a Yehuda, kosher roi Chochma Sehemene, that you learned most of your Chochma from him, even if your Chochma consists only of Mishnah, for example. Rav Acha bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Sheshes Halacha K'Rav Yosi. That no, he says that Halacha is like Rav Yosi. That only if you learned Chochma, only if you learned Gemara.
Not most of you.
Not most of you. The question is, Mi Amar Rav Yechon Hachi.
Rav Yosi said, "If you learn
Oh, you're right. Rabbi Yossi had said that even if you only learned one Mishnah from him, yeah.
Right.
Sorry, yeah, you're right. That was Rabbi Yossi saying, yeah. Okay, the question is, did Rabbi Yochanan really say that as long as you learned, let's say, for example, Mishnayos from somebody, and you learned that most of what you know, that's enough to be considered your Rebbe?
Yeah, people teaching you Mishnah,
absolutely. But Rabbi Yochanan, halacha is stam Mishnah. But we find that Rabbi Yochanan generally says that halacha is like a stam Mishnah, or it's not Rabbi Shalim de Chachma. And our Mishnah said Rabbi Shalim de Chachma, which Lechora is like Rameir from the Braisa. So what are you telling me? The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is, my chachma roi chachma. So yes, but Rabbi Yochanan can understand. The word chachma in our Mishnah does not mean chachma in the absolute sense, like Rabbi Meir says it, meaning Gemara, but any chachma that, yes, it could even be Tanakh or Mishnayos or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anybody have the patience to continue and finish the parak, or should we leave it for tomorrow at this point? We've been here a while already. Yeah. We'll leave it tomorrow, I guess.